Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Hello everyone, I'm Tom Deason. I'm joined here with Georgina Robinson in Tokyo. Where are we exactly at this point in time, G?
We're down an alley in a beautiful, charming little neighbourhood called Ueno, which is very close to Asakusa, which is quite a residential neighbourhood. We've spurned the Wallabies' choice of hotel and region down in Tokyo Bay, which is the middle of nowhere, unless you're 4 years old and are really into Disney characters, because it's right near Tokyo Disneyland. But it's an absolute sort of, it's a pretty barren place as far as culture goes for me and nightlife for you. So we put our heads together and chose a more central Tokyo location. And we're in a really cool little neighborhood where we can get a taste of Japanese life.
We all are about exploring the culture and making the most of our time here. Everyone's settled in. It's Sunday. It's a travel day.
Yeah. How bad are travel days?
Not ideal. It's longer than you think, isn't it? We were on the flight of the team heading down. They'll start their prep tomorrow for the Wales game on Sunday. But we were at the airport in the baggage carousel, and you could see Michael Checker maybe not being super thrilled about something, and it sort of pricked our interests. And
yeah, there were secret squirrels going on, for sure. There were some senior team officials in discussions beside the baggage carousel, and sure enough, about 2 hours later, the Rugby News Service puts out an update. Tommy?
Rhys Hodge has been cited for his tackle on Yato, the Fijian back rower, in the game on Saturday night. So there hasn't been a time and a place determined for that hearing, but he'll have to front up. Three-person hearing, I believe.
Independent. So Nigel Hampton, a Kiwi, chairing it, and then a Scot and an Argentinian. And the citing commissioner was Scottish. So maybe we should go back to the beginning, because there's so much conjecture and speculation and controversy around these things. First of all, as we know, nothing was done on field, and Fiji actually referred this to the siting commissioner to look at. We can't say for sure whether the siting commissioner may have taken a look at it on their own, but Fiji escalated it themselves. Now, the siting commissioner then had a look at it, and he didn't have to. He could have rejected that referral, but he found that it met the red card threshold. So what happens then is Rhys Hodge, we've just been passed by a lady on a bicycle with her baby on the back.
Cute. Very cute.
Very cute. The Japanese love their bikes. They do.
Might have to get one.
Back on track, though. So now what happens is the Wallabies have to agree a time for Hodge and probably the team manager or something to go to the hearing. And, you know, they'll present their own evidence. Hodge will probably speak if he's asked to and if he wants to, and we'll see what happens. There's a really interesting and new framework for dealing with these things. Only in May did World Rugby send up an update on the dangerous tackle foul play framework. And it's pretty detailed. The important point is that by citing Rhys Hodge, the commissioner has agreed that it meets the red card threshold. And sorry,
I was just going to say before that, I mean, the Australians' argument is that it did go to the TMO on the field, and that, you know, Fiji did say, can you have a look at this? The TMO had a look and said there's no dramas there. So they might be in a bit of strife as well, and the Aussies will say, well, it was looked on the field. So that you can imagine perhaps today they were maybe a little bit surprised that it has been cited, perhaps.
100%. And, you know, I think you can't discount the weight of public pressure and just the stakes. You know, it's the opening round of the pool games at the World Cup, and World Rugby, as we mentioned last night, want to be seen to be doing the right thing. The framework's really interesting. So there was some talk about this being a shoulder charge, but I think it's more likely this will be regarded a high tackle. And there's a pretty easy flow chart to follow. And it's all available on World Rugby's website, and we've embedded it in all our articles. So you should be able to inform yourselves and make up your own minds. There's a bit at stake. You know, Reece Hodge could miss the Wales game. Now, you know, there's also something to be said for the fact that Dane Haylett-Petty came on and did really well. So, you know, is Reece Hodge even in line for selection given what happened, given the traffic he copped, given the likelihood of an aerial assault from Wales, and given Dane Haylett-Petty's relative precision under the high ball? So
Haylett-Petty, maybe to start. Adam Ashley Cooper, fourth World Cup, maybe in that utility role off the bench.
That could happen. That could happen. So, you know, I mean, it's not like losing Michael Hooper or David Pocock, but it's still an important case. So if we look at the tackle framework, and it has already met the red card threshold. So that means that there was high contact by the tackler, and that it made contact with the shoulder or head of the ball carrier. Now, then it goes down to what was the degree of danger. And to meet the red card threshold, that automatically has to be high. So we're already there. Mitigating factors include that the tackler makes a definite attempt to change the height in an effort to avoid the ball carrier's head. I don't think that happened in this instance. That the ball carrier suddenly drops in height. I don't think that happened. That the tackler is unsighted prior to contact. It was quick.
Absolutely not that quick, though.
Absolutely not that quick. That it was a reactionary tackle and immediately release. Well, maybe not was an immediate release, but certainly Reece Hodge bounced off Yato.
Yeah, and there was some...
And it was a covering tackle.
And there were some screenshots floating around on Twitter, you know, which may not have been privy to viewers at the time. It does look like Reece has tried to wrap that right arm, as perhaps maybe was not seen before. But look, nonetheless, he's going to have to front up and defend this. It's Australia's biggest game of the pools. They would obviously want him playing, you know, provided they're going to pick him, which I would probably assume that they were still going to. It is a distraction. Time and date yet to be set, as we discussed. So we'll obviously be on top of that and following whenever that happens. But yeah, you could imagine that the Aussies wouldn't be too thrilled when they found that out this afternoon.
No, and look, just to go back, there's one other mitigating factor: that head contact is indirect, that it starts elsewhere on the body and then slips or moves up, resulting in minor contact, the ball carrier's head or neck. Yato was concussed and had to leave the field and didn't return to the game because of the concussion. So I don't think there's any mitigating factor that they can cite. So, you know, depending on, as you say, Australia making a good case for the fact that the TMO and the on-field match officiating team saw nothing in it, and that Hodge did have a right arm that went in. You know, there's also that front-on angle where he drops his shoulder. So I think this could be a really interesting one. But I would say to everyone, go and have a look at it in real time. Reece Hodge certainly didn't have the time to plot a dangerous tackle. You know, he ran straight across field and basically, in a reactionary way, tried just put his body in front of Yato's. But there is a little look that he's tucked in his shoulder, and you know, maybe he's trying to get down and wrap the right arm. And I think that's what the discussion is going to be about on Monday or Tuesday, whenever they have to front this hearing.
And it's no surprise that this has reared its head. Some of our English colleagues have been going quite hard at it, saying, well, how has he got away with that? World Rugby, as we discussed on the podcast on Saturday evening, talked about, you know, we thought that maybe Reece might be, they might make an example out of him. So watch this space. It's going to be interesting.
It will be interesting. And we will have all of the updates on this case on rugbyheaven.com.au and on our Twitter accounts at Tom Decent and at GRob.
Yep, absolutely. We'll be interacting with the punters on there. So, and if you want us to talk about anything on here as well, let us know.
Do let us know.
Yes, we're in Tokyo, new place. I haven't been here before. I know you've been here a little bit.
A few times.
Quite good. We had a travel day today, wedged sort of within the team.
Always awkward.
always not where you want to be. There's obviously that, you know, everyone's nice enough, you know, but being a journalist in, amongst the pack, I saw Jordan Ulacy doing a bit of homework today on his laptop with a few, you know, videos that have been cut up for him. And I don't know whether he noticed I was there, but he definitely tried to hide that laptop a little bit more. So interesting nonetheless. I remember once in a New Zealand test, I'd got 1A, seat 1A, and that's the first time ever, because obviously I was just in cattle class for my whole life and always will be. But Michael Checker up the back yelled out and said, "Aren't you going to give that to one of the second rowers, that seat?" And I'd waited my whole life for this moment, turned around to Isaac Rodder and said, "Oh, do you want this seat, Isaac?" And he just sort of shrugged his shoulders and said, "Oh, okay." Gave it up. But it set a terrible precedent, because whenever another journo got a seat in the front row on these little flights from city to city, the players, not expected to, but there was a bit of scoreboard pressure to give it up. So, but everyone was in the back with us today. It was nice.
And you're a gent, Tom, and a professional, and have some sympathy for the rugby professionals. So I think you did the right thing there with Isaac Rodder, but must have really hurt.
You had any funny playing experiences?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, today, taking my two children, aged 4 and 2, on the plane with the Wallabies, you can bet there was a Leonard family conference. That's my married name. About behavioural standards on jet planes, particularly when the Wallabies are on there with us. And I'm delighted to say that I sat nowhere near my husband and two children, so I don't know what went on. I think they were actually seated near Scott Johnson, and I'm sure they were fine. That was pretty funny, I thought.
Absolutely. Shout out to one of our listeners, the great Pete Fairbairn, who's obviously disappointed that we haven't been filming more of these from whiskey bars in Japan, despite probably a perception that we're alcoholics. We're obviously not. We're just trying to find a bit of a quieter spot.
Tom Deason says with an Asahi can in his hands.
We just finished watching Ireland towel up Scotland, so and it's been a long travel day. But
it has been a long travel day.
A guy we should give a bit of credit to, he spoke a bit after the game as well, is Tolu. I know his story that hasn't been... I mean, he got man of the match, so obviously it's been written about, but...
Yeah, he's emerging as a bit of an unsung hero. He's doesn't have... He's always been this player who, you know, you've been like... Is the upside big enough to justify the downside, which was a likely yellow card in most important matches? And I don't know what's been happening. Maybe it was the wake-up call, the court case, the drink driving charge. I'm not sure. Maybe it's, you know, just a young man growing up, but he has certainly revealed himself to be, as Checker said, a much more settled character. And you tell me what he said to you after the game.
Well, I mean, I told him, you know, you're the first Wallabies hooker to score 2 tries in a World Cup. And he had a nice little smile. He didn't, you know, want to make too big a deal of it, obviously, but it means a lot to him. He talked about the fact that they're not getting carried away with this, but he did speak about he wanted more from his fellow forwards. He didn't think they'd perhaps had given Australia's backs a good enough platform, which is quite an interesting comment. You know, from a guy speaking his mind. Yeah, I mean, he had a good game. Things were going well, and I mean, he was sharing a fair bit of stuff on his Instagram story today, you know, just from friends and family who were getting around him. And I spoke to him at the squad announcement in Sydney about it, so it's a good tale. He's a good bloke, but you know, there have been some times where he's probably let himself down, and you know, he's, you know, to blame for that. But
and aren't these stories as reporters just the best to cover when, you know, if you stick around the game long enough, you get these guys 18, 19, 21, 22 year olds. Just young men growing up, making mistakes, and if you're lucky, you get to see them come good, and sometimes they sort of falter again, and they're just humans. And it's really nice when you can write about, when you can make mention in your copy during a match of a guy who's performed amazingly and on the back of some challenges. There's kind of nothing better. We've done it a lot this year with James O'Connor, Christian Lilifano, obviously not behaviourally, but, you know, with his health scares and amazing comeback.
James Slipper,
Carmichael Hunt, Adam Ashley Cooper's been one of the great stories also, you know, to make his fourth World Cup, put it all on the line and put it all out there. There've been a lot of really nice yarns to write, and hopefully a lot of really nice yarns still to write this World Cup.
There is some big breaking news today as well. We have a column.
Missed something?
Yeah, well, you know, depending on how much you contributed today. The cauliflower is back officially. We are doing a daily column over here.
Bits and pieces, yeah. It's a bits and pieces column, you know, sure. Because there's just so much to cover with all these teams in the World Cup, and, you know, often we're quite Australia-focused or the opposition team Australia's playing, so it's really nice to kind of, like, cast around. You hear little things. We've got a great one in the works, a very funny little story that we should have in Tuesday's column. But tomorrow we've got some nice stuff. Can you give us a little insight into a couple of items?
Well, I mean, look, the Graham Henry quote from last night on Saturday night after before the South Africa New Zealand game was just an absolute hoot, wasn't it? No guy knows how to win a World Cup like him, but asked how some young All Blacks would go.
There were 12 debutants in the All Blacks 23, which is staggering, right? Especially considering they were playing considering they were playing the Springboks, and the announcer asked Graham, you know, what can you say to those guys to kind of put their nerves at ease? and Sir Graham Henry's response was, ah, well, there's nothing you can say. They'll be shitting themselves, quite frankly.
It's not a bad accent, G. 6 out of 10. Yeah, that was quite humorous. There's a few other bits and pieces there. Matty Burke was quoted today on...
Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, he'd been chatting to Scott Johnson, the new director of rugby. He just sheds light on what Scott thinks his new role is and why he's sort of hanging in the background a bit more as opposed to going to team meetings every day, which I found a little interesting. He's not on the... he's not right on the heart of it. You know, I suppose he's just sort of working around the fringes and he's a selector too, so he can't be too close with these guys as well.
That's true. And it's interesting because we know from Scotland and a few conversations with some of the Scottish journalists that he did take on almost a shadowy role. And I don't mean shadowy because his influence was negative. It was the opposite. It had a very positive and constructive influence on the Scottish high performance system. But that he never said much. He never fronted the media. He might have fronted it once or twice in his time there. Mm. And he was very hard to get at. And he certainly seems to be continuing that that trend here. He is having a lot of influence already on the Australian system. And one of the things I'm personally really interested in is what he does after the World Cup. Because then, you know, if there's a coaching changeover, that's Scott Johnson and Raylene Castle really getting their hands on the system and shaping it in the way they want to shape it to get the best out of Australia's talent pool. So I think he'll be a really interesting person to watch, even though we may not ever hear from him. Anyway, we're at 17 minutes and we've been told to keep this under 18.
Really quickly, you're going to be on the Wallabies beat this week following them around. I'm going a bit of secret squirreling, heading off tomorrow
Going off the grid for something, yes, that we can't talk about now. But you might send us a dispatch tomorrow and maybe it'll be in the podcast.
If you can get
late me. Monday or Tuesday, if we can get you. I like it. I like it. That's all to be revealed late on Monday, early on Tuesday.
But thanks for listening. Get us on Twitter if you want us to chat about anything, and it's always a pleasure speaking to our beloved listeners.
That's really touching. Good night.
Sayonara.